Welcome to the State of the Race. It is April 6th, 2024, 100 days till the Republican National Convention, 135 days until the Democratic National Convention, and 213 days until the general election. Coming up on today's program, we have a couple of questions. How have opinions of the two candidates changed since 2020? How are the parties and their makeup changing when it comes to income? And finally, no labels. Not only has no labels, but they also seem to have no candidates. We'll get into that here in just a couple of minutes. But we're going to start with our key metrics. First of all, some interesting polling coming out from The Economist, where they have the congressional ballot, the generic ballot, a question that kind of gives you the sense as to who's being favored between Republicans and Democrats generally, outside of the presidential race. And right now, the Democrats actually lead 44 to 41 in that measure. Now, they asked the same group of people who you would choose for the presidential race, and that one came out as a tie. Biden 43, Trump 43, Kennedy at 2, and then Cornel West and Jill Stein at 1 and 0. The reason why I think this particular poll is interesting is because this is definitely not how this is going to come out. This is one of those polls that we know is wrong with 100% certainty. It is wrong because people are going to vote for a candidate, right? Like right now in this poll, only 89% of voters are represented among these choices. There's 11% of people who are saying, I don't know, basically at this point. And the question is, it's interesting because Kennedy being at 2% is probably closer to where he will wind up than a lot of the polling we're seeing today. A lot of the polling is telling us, you know, RFK Jr. is going to be at 12% or 14%. It's possible, but very unlikely. He's probably going to be closer to 2% than he is 14% at the end of the day, which means a lot of this third-party support erodes, as it normally does as we approach an election, and it's the question of where those votes go. Now, with RFK Jr., so far, it's shown in most of the polling, that it will hurt Biden more. The more representation for RFK Jr., if he's up at that 14%, you know, area, that's going to be better for Donald Trump. If he's lower around what this poll is showing at 2%, it's probably better for Joe Biden. If 11% of the vote is out there thinking about RFK, probably the majority of that vote goes toward Joe Biden. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. By the way, I also want to tell you, on the Wednesday episode of Stu Does America, we went through a bunch of polling. And if you're listening to the State of the Race, that would, I think, be interesting to you. It was my Wednesday monologue. We went through about kind of the ways the economy is changing and the way the media is affecting that. You know, back in mid-2022, the economic outlook, confidence level for Americans was minus 60. That has improved to minus 20. We all kind of correctly note that minus 20 still sucks, and that's true. But the minus 60 to minus 20 progression is good for Biden. It is showing the media is making inroads with the American people. And that is a change to keep monitoring it, and we will keep monitoring it, of course. Another change over the past couple of weeks, we usually give you the prediction markets and what they are thinking about the presidential election. Well, Joe Biden has pulled ahead in that market. 50% say it's going to be Joe Biden, 46% now say Trump. There's a few percent for RFK Jr. and a couple straggler percent for people like Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom, just in case. Now, our quick candidate updates. Donald Trump leads Biden in 6 of the 7 swing states, according to the Wall Street Journal and their poll. This is, of course, good news and has been consistent for Donald Trump for a long time. And honestly, he's been leading these polls farther and for really as far as you can kind of remember, as they've been doing swing state polling, 6 or 7 out of the 7 states. In this one, he is tied in 1 of the states. However, when you throw in third party candidates, he leads in all of them. He's also up by 1 in a new national poll. And I think the general sense here from most conservatives I talk to is that Trump is way out ahead. And I, you know, there's some evidence to believe that right at this moment. However, you know, the average national poll right now has Donald Trump up by 0.8%. Now, that is not nothing. In fact, it's much better than he has been, including throughout 2016. He was never ahead, really, in the average polling back in 2016, or really 2020 either, and obviously was very close in 2020 to winning and did win in 2016. So this is a better position than he's been in the polling. It is not as good as he was about a month or two ago, where he was up by about 3.5 points. So that has shrunk. It's coming. It's going to get closer. We all know it's going to get closer. You can't really make any projections based on this at this point. A couple of legal updates for you from the Trump situation. Judge Juan Merchan has ruled that the former president waited too long to try to use a presidential immunity defense to block certain evidence from being allowed at the trial. This is in the hush money case. Over to the classified documents case, Judge Cannon, this is yesterday, declined Trump's request that she dismiss the case based on arguments that he had authority to take classified or sensitive documents with him after he left the White House. Of course, she left some options open for Trump. These things are just going to continue to progress, and we're going to be following them on Stu Does America. For Joe Biden, he has it's a fascinating headline from USA Today. Wisconsin voters reminded Biden his support of Israel is a problem. He's not listening. I mean, if you missed the last 2 months of news, because he has slowly but surely at every step of the way turned more and more against Israel. He is responding to that pressure. He is bending to his leftward flank. He is bending to his base, as he typically does over and over and over again, all the way now, calling for a ceasefire like Rashida Tlaib did back in the day. There's been some movement on that front, but that is going to be a big subplot on the Democratic side. And No Labels, who, you know, just had one of their founders, Joe Lieberman, sadly pass away. They spent a fortune trying to put together a legitimate third-party moderate option where they would put somebody like Joe Manchin on the ticket, or Chris Christie or Nikki Haley or somebody in the middle. And supposedly, seemingly their goal being to pull votes away from Donald Trump. Now, what's fascinating about this is not that they couldn't find a good candidate. It's just fascinating that they spent all this money, they got all these donations, they built this giant organization, and then here they are in the middle of an election, which is kind of prime time for a party like this. You have Donald Trump, who's obviously very good at playing to his base. You have Joe Biden, who in 2020 seemed to say, hey, I'm the moderate option, you can trust me, now is playing to Rashida Tlaib and AOC every 5 seconds. Both candidates are historically disliked by in every measure of polling. You'd think this would be a time they could come up with somebody to run. Everyone's terrified to run. They don't want to be blamed for the wrong guy being elected. None of them think they can actually win. And so No Labels has abandoned their effort to field a presidential candidate. If this means anything, it probably helps Joe Biden, because all the third party candidates seem to pull from Biden a little bit more. So them going away is a good thing for Biden. Now let's look at today's focus. And we're going to focus today on how the electorate is changing. For example, if you look at the differences between how voters perceive Biden and Trump from 2020 to 2024, you see a couple of really interesting things. Number one, people's opinions of Joe Biden have changed relatively dramatically. Can Joe Biden manage the government effectively? In 2020, 52% of voters said yes. Now that number is 39%. That's a massive drop off. Is Joe Biden likable? In 2020, it was 66%. Now it's down to 57%, which still is about 56% too high. Does Joe Biden display a good judgment in a crisis? It was 49% back then. Now it's 40%. Is he a strong and decisive leader? That has fallen as well, from 46% to 38%. Does he care about the needs of people like you? That has fallen as well, 55% to 48%. Is he honest and trustworthy? That has fallen from 52% to 46%. In my view of how this has gone over the past few years, I think those drops should be more substantial. However, he's dropped over every single one of those categories. That is not the story with Donald Trump. And it's interesting because you might think, well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. People are looking back and remembering the Trump years in a favorable way, and now they like him more. Well, that's not really the case either. What basically we've seen with Donald Trump from 2020 to 2024 is that no one's really changed their opinion on him at all. They're more negative on Biden. On Trump, pretty much people are consistent. Can Donald Trump manage the government effectively? In 2020, it was 48%. In 2024, it's 49%. He's actually improved in that measure. Is he likable? From 36 to 37%. He's up 1 point. Does he display good judgment in a crisis? He went from 44 to 45%. He's up in that measure. Is he a strong and decisive leader? He's gone from 56% to 57%. So all those things he's actually improved on very, very slightly, but basically flat. Does he care about the needs of people like you? He's dropped slightly there from 45 to 42. The only one with any real movement, I guess, is he honest and trustworthy? And Trump has fallen off a little bit there from 40% in 2020 to 35%. Neither of those are particularly good numbers. But he actually fell a little bit less than Joe Biden did in that same measure. So it's interesting. I mean, Biden's numbers in some of these are actually a little bit better than Trump's, but he's had a much worse run over the past 4 years. We're also looking today at the effect on the electorate when it comes to income. The parties, you kind of have these like broad strokes of parties and how they appeal to different measures of income. You know, sometimes you think rich people like Republicans. Sometimes you think poor, you know, working class people like Democrats, poor people like Democrats, whatever the thing is. So I wanted to go back through history. Nate Silver put a good post together on this, and he had some really good, worthwhile analysis to read on this. But I want to focus on one particular issue here. In 1976, the richest voters were Republicans, 62% to 38%. They voted Republican. The poorest voters were the exact opposite, 62% for Democrats and 38% for Republicans. Now, you go to 1984, where Reagan is smoking everybody. And, you know, the richest voters stayed with Republicans. In fact, he improved on that, winning 69 to 31. But the poorest voters were still Democrats, but just by a hair, 54 to 46. However, Ronald Reagan won every single other measure. The only measure he lost were the poorest voters. All the middle class measures he won by landslides and, of course, went on to a massive victory. Now you go to 2000, a little bit later, George W. Bush versus Al Gore, obviously famously tight election. What were the profiles then? Well, people who made over $100,000, the richer voters, went with Republicans and George W. Bush, 56 to 44. On the other side, it was among the poorest voters, Al Gore was able to win them, 60 to 40%. You see the breakdowns are similar, but they're getting a little bit tighter. And that kind of is what we've seen going forward. In 2016, the richest voters actually split 50-50. All of a sudden, the Republican advantage among high earners has kind of gone away. And where Republicans win this election is with upper middle class voters. Between 50 and 250,000 a year, they do pretty darn well. They lose badly still among lower income voters, 57 to 43. But now we're looking at 2024. In 2024, we don't know what the electorate will look like, of course. But what we see so far, the projections are interesting. Democrats are actually winning the wealthier voters now, 54 to 46. Republicans are now winning the poorest voters, 52 to 48. And the middle is pretty much split. The two things you'll pull from this, number one, the roles have sort of reversed here, right? Like where rich voters now seem to be sort of leaning Democrat and lower income voters are sort of leaning Republican. There's positives and negatives to that. If you're a Republican and you want your people to be elected, obviously it's good to break into new swaths of voters. That's the positive side. The negative side is if you're trading them for other voters one-to-one, and what you're getting is a less reliable voter, a voter who comes to the poll less frequently. Usually lower income voters vote less frequently or less reliable voters than people on the higher income scale. And the same thing goes with age. Younger voters are less reliable than older voters. If you're trading those groups for each other, it's not a one-to-one trade. It's actually a negative trade for you in most circumstances. If you can keep your old voters, your old wealthier voters, and add voters on the lower income scale, that's good. It's really good. And that's how you win massive landslide Reagan-like elections. If you trade them, that can be long-term damaging for your party. We will see if that holds up. The other part that's interesting to look at is these margins have really switched. It used to be, you know, 70-30 and 65-35 when you're talking about these extremes in income. Now you're talking 54-46, 52-48. It's no longer really an income story. There are bigger splits with education. There are bigger splits with age. There's bigger splits with race as you go through these numbers. And we'll get into those in upcoming weeks. All right, before we go, we're going to finish with our totally made up scorecard feature. Yes, this has no science to it whatsoever. It's just based on my vibes. And I will say these two things. I'll give you these two measures and you can tell me how wrong I am as we go forward. But I'm going to give you two things. Number one, if the election was held today, who would have the chance of winning? I'm going to tell you it is Trump, 65.3%. He would have a 65.3% chance of winning if the election was held today. Now, you might note it is not going to be held today, and that is true. You know, I mean, stranger things have happened, I suppose, in this country at this point, but we don't expect it to happen today. So assuming the election is not happening today, we need to factor in all the possibilities and scientifically calculate all the vibes for the next 214 days. Who right now is favored to win the election? I'm going to say very slightly, it's Joe Biden, 54.7% chance of winning. I know you hate that, and I can't do anything about that, unfortunately. But what I will say is there's a lot to happen, and 54% is just basically a coin toss. I mean, but I do think Joe Biden, not because he's good, but because he's got a lot of important allies, and those allies are the Department of Justice. Those allies are courts across the country. Those allies are the mainstream media. Those allies are millionaire and billionaire donors. They've got a lot of money. They've got a lot of tools. They've got the incumbency. They got a lot behind them. A lot of tailwinds here for Joe Biden, despite the fact that he's 100 years old and can't get through a sentence. So that's our totally made up scorecard feature for the day. We'll have more, of course, on Stu Does America, where, of course, on Monday through Friday, I'm going to be on with Megyn Kelly as well next week. And I'm going to be gone for part of the week doing a new documentary for Blaze TV. So I'll give you more details on that in the coming weeks. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you later. Have a great weekend.